I guess I'm starting, aren't I?
Shit. I've done this for so long. What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Audio Rambling Podcast, and I'm here with Mark.
Hello.
It's been a while, hasn't it?
It has been a while.
It's been a bit of a while. We've both been a bit busy with real life stuff, so we just haven't even got around the time to meet up together and record a podcast. So it's taken a while, but we decided we've just been to the UK guitar show, isn't it? Not the London guitar show.
So yes, the UK guitar show and London bass show.
Yes. And just like we did last year, straight after it, we did a podcast, so we thought, hang on, we're actually hanging out together, and we don't have to be off doing other things, so we can actually sit down and record a podcast.
Yeah, no, we've sort of got through our life stuff. You got married, I got engaged, yeah. I changed job once, you changed job twice.
It's all been going off since the last episode, yep. There's been wedding things going on, and then there's been all sorts of other things, so... But now we've finally got the time.
And we've been looking at lots and lots of lovely gear. Yeah. So yeah, it's the UK Guitar Show and the London Bass Show, which is the first year they've done the two of those together. And thank goodness.
Yeah. So apparently what happened in the last previous, I think 3 or 4 years, have been the Bass Show usually took place at London Olympia in about March time. And I never got round to attending it because it seemed the weekend that they did it every March, I was always busy doing something, so I could never attend. And then the guitar show was 6 months later in September, also at Olympia. And basically, you know, there was a bit of separation there. So the bass show, all things bass, guitar show, all things guitar. And, you know, it kind of seemed a bit needless. Just seemed a bit pointless in having two separate events when you could really just maybe find somewhere else to do it as one whole event and have more people attending, you know, and not spend double the amount on marketing and all the rest of it. And they found a venue. It's no longer at the Olympia. It's, where was it? The Business and Design Centre.
Yeah, in Islington.
In Islington. So, and it made sense to just do it together. Why wouldn't you call it the guitar show, have it, you know, just both together, all the different brands, you know, all the different companies all under one roof. So you've got more people coming through and people, you know, guitarists get to try basses, bassists get to try guitars, and, well, the drummers can go to their own show later on in the year.
Well, yeah.
So, yeah, I think that made... It was so much better that they did it like this, because we went to the guitar show last year and it was good.
We did, yeah.
But it was a lot more smaller scale.
Yeah, it wasn't... and the venue didn't, like, feel as expansive... The Business and Design Centre, despite having the blandest name possible, it's actually quite a nice space, nice sort of arched ceiling.
Yeah, they were able to fit more in.
Yeah, and
you know,
well, when everybody was in there, it sounded a bit like this.
It felt closer to the very first guitar show you and I ever went to, it back in Wembley in like 2003 or 2004.
Around then, yeah.
Yeah, which they used to do in Wembley, and we went to that one and it was huge. It was packed out. There were so many different things to see, I remember back then. And since then we've been to a few and in various iterations and different guises. You know, I think they've been run by different companies. And they've never been as good as that first one. There seemed to be less on offer. One year we went, it seemed like it was more a trade show, less
that was more effort.
Yeah, less an actual kind of like convention, if you want to call it.
Yeah.
Whereas this, it seemed like it was a bit more back to that old school thing. And it just makes sense. You know, there are more and more people picking up the guitar, the bass, you know. And you've got a real market there. So why not have one event rather than separating it out in two and just, you know, needlessly... creating that separation, really. So yeah, we saw lots of awesome guitars, basses, we tried out some stuff, we wandered around a bit, you know, we heard some people playing some nice stuff, we heard some people playing some awful stuff.
Yeah.
We saw some pointless stuff as well.
I mean, like any guitar show, there's the people who seem to be playing the loudest are always a certain type of player. So the guitarists, there's lots of shredders, and the bassists, there's lots of like slap bass, and there wasn't too much of that.
No, I to be honest, I mean I heard a little bit of shredding going on, but I don't know whether there was just the general ambient noise was so overpowering. I couldn't hear too many people just like trying to hit like a million notes per minute.
Well, I think they were mostly getting them in headphones. Lots of places had people in headphones this year.
Just makes sense.
Which actually was an improvement on last year, where they just had people going around with noise sensors and telling you off if you started enjoying yourself.
You know what? So I was actually thinking while we were there, I think the other reason they moved venue was to do with that. That caused a lot of issues where basically, due to UK law, health and safety, you can only have your sound above a certain level of decibels for 15, for every 15 minutes for that per that hour.
Yeah.
If I even explained that correctly. After that, you have to go down. You have to be below that, which meant, you know, people could go last year for like 15 minutes would go hell for leather, amps would turn up. Then after that, everyone would have to turn down. And it had a very weird vibe to everything. This year, there was no one wandering around, and the noise in there was, you know, fairly substantial, but I think because it was a bigger building and less residential, I want to say as well, it seemed like that wasn't a problem. You did not have people coming around with decibel meters.
Yeah, I mean, it was still technically the rule. They sent me an email the other day just sort of like saying what the rules are, but it just seemed to be less of an issue.
Yeah, which was good, because last year there was a couple of times where both you and I were playing things and the sound police turned up, and you know, then the guys at the booth had to turn it down, and then when they did turn it down, we couldn't hear ourselves at all. So it's like, oh yeah, this feels really nice to play. What does it sound like? I don't know, you know, kind of thing. Which is a bit annoying. So yeah, so that was another good thing about this year. We didn't have to deal with all of that again.
Yeah, and there's still the issue with, you know, you can't hear yourself as clearly as you would like, and sort of trying out pedals. Like I tried a couple of the Meris pedals. They're a company who do some very strange pedals.
Yeah.
So the ones I tried were the Ottobits and. It's got like an Eclipsy type name. It's a synth pedal, so it transforms your sound, the sound of your guitar, in a way that's very similar to the sort of tools that are on board a synth, like sequencers and envelopes and filters and all that sort of stuff. And like some of the settings had like really sort of like long swells and all that sort of stuff. And trying to sort of like get a feel for what it was doing in the listening environment we had. I mean, it was a very complicated pedal, and so trying to sort of like get a feel for these things that we're doing, especially when they were starting off very quietly. I mean, the Otto bit was a bit more blatant in what it was doing. That was a strange bit crusher, but with like sequencer and glitch effects and stuff built in.
Oh yeah, you were getting some very, very cool kind of little effects. It sounded like some of the special effects you get out of like, you know, 8-bit and 16-bit games.
Yeah, that's so what they
like
were going
for. Like your
SNES,
yeah. Super Nintendo, and like Mega Drive games from back in the day. It sounded like you could do some cool stuff.
And so with that. You were getting this sort of really sort of like clipped distortion from the bit crushing, sort of then blending with these sort of strange, arcadey, stuttery, glitchy effects.
Yeah, yeah.
Fun, but definitely a pedal that is, I feel like you have to build songs around.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's one that you have to think about where you're using it and why you're using it. It's not like it's a very specialist pedal. It's there for one specific use, I think.
But the joy of the guitar show is getting to try that sort of thing. You know, there's lots of things that I've seen on YouTube or Twitter that when they're being sort of demoed by somebody who has read the manual inside and out and is able to get exactly the sounds that the pedal is built to make, you don't necessarily get a feel for how it would sound when you're playing it. And there are some pedals, your sort of basic drives and choruses and whatever, where it's very easy to sort of make that connection. But something as mental as these Meris pedals takes a... I'm very glad that somewhere like the Guitar Show is there so you can just sort of go around and try these things and see how you feel, and if it isn't quite for you, then all right, go around the corner, there's something else.
Well, this is why I think like things like the Guitar London or UK Guitar Show, as it is now known as, is so important. not everyone lives right round the corner from a guitar shop, you know. I think the guitar shop I go to, the two guitar shops I can go to that are probably easiest for me to get to are Guitar in Epsom and Anderton's in Guildford. But even then, they're both still about a 25-minute to half an hour drive away. So it's not like I can just pop in whenever I feel like. And so I'm not just going to go there just to try something random. When I'm going there, I'm either going there to either seriously look at something or usually to go and purchase something.
Yeah.
Unless I'm in the area and I happen to go past a shop, then I will pop in. But I don't often frequent those areas because they're quite... And a lot of people are in that same boat. So most of us will get our gear demos, obviously nowadays, thanks to, obviously, YouTube. Or, you know, other videos. But it's in order to... all other video...
Other video sharing websites are available. Who uses them?
I think we use Vimeo. Very few. Something like the guitar show is really, really important so that you can... It gives a chance for all the brands to... And, you know, all the manufacturers and everyone to turn up in one spot. Bring a range of their products, let people try them. And okay, you're not necessarily going to get many people like buying on the day. You might get a few, but the thing is, you might get someone interested enough in your brand that they'll maybe like bear you in mind, and maybe then eventually go and get, you know, maybe contact you to get a custom build, or, you know, when if they go into a shop, they might try out your, you know, your bass guitar, your guitar. So I think it's quite important that they do run these shows, because it's how often have you and I basically used it as an excuse to go and try loads of stuff? Some of the stuff we're not even interested in buying. We know we're never going to buy it. We just try it for fun. Other stuff, if there is a genuine interest, and then we've even come across stuff both last year and this year that we've been like, oh, this is actually interesting, and they're now on our radar. So
yeah, no, like I am never going to buy a Super Strat. It's really not my kind of guitar. But we like wandered over to the Ibanez store, picked something up, had a noodle for a minute, and it's the sort of thing that would... I'd feel a bit like I was insulting a shopkeeper if I went into a store and did that. But at the guitar show, it's how it is, and it's a really nice thing to do.
Yeah, exactly that. You can try out stuff that you're never really going to be interested in. You know, that's part of the fun of it as well. So I definitely think it's important that they have these things, because music shops are coming few and far between nowadays. Most people are buying things like, you know, being delivered to them from like a shop might be based down south, but they're like living up north kind of thing. And, you know, generally, and you can't always go and try out, you know, these things, and this gives you an excuse to. So yeah, no, I this is why I think it's so important they do it. I hope it continues growing as well, and it gets bigger as well, so you see more and more brands turning up. You know, there were a lot of the big boys were there, but there were still plenty of other brands who weren't there that you could have, you know, been like, it would have been good to see them there as well. And one of them that comes straight to mind is Mesa weren't there.
Yeah, a guy from Mesa was there.
Was he?
the guy when we were having a drink.
Oh, okay.
And he came up to us and told us that he worked for an amp company called Mesa Boogie. It's just like, mate, you're at the guitar show. You don't need to clarify who Mesa Boogie is.
Just one of the most sought after, like, you know.
So, companies. But he didn't seem to be there in an official capacity. He just...
Yeah. So it'd be nice to see some even more companies, like, you know, turn up. But for what we saw this year, there was a good... Good kind of like spread.
I mean, in terms of amp stuff, I think both Blackstar and Orange made a particularly good impression because they had their stands in the main section, but very near the start, they had these sort of little sort of museum stands.
Yeah.
Where it was all roped off, so nothing that you could play, but you could see some of their sort of like their history, and they had like prototypes and sort of models that aren't sold anymore, and it was just sort of like a nice, oh, that's fancy, as you walked in. It's like, oh, I want to have a play on that, and then you go upstairs and you can have a play on that. It's,
yeah, that was definitely well done, and they had big spaces as well, so you could go and try out a load of their amps as well. So that was good to see. A lot of other companies, the smaller ones, kind of banded together with some shops and stuff,
yes.
which kind of made sense, because they're very popular companies, but also it would cost them a lot to get their own stand in a place like that, and it makes sense maybe to just band together with either your primary retailer within the UK or whatever it is. And I know Dingwall did that, Dark Glass did that to an extent.
Well, so yeah, Dark Glass were there with the same ones that had Meris and Death by Audio and Old Blood Noise Endeavours.
Yep.
And I assume they all have the same distributor.
Yeah.
But they were there as a sort of little pedal corner, and each of those brands had their own sort of pedal board, their own mini section within this booth.
Yeah.
So it was almost like just the whole thing in miniature. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I know, so like Dingwall were with Bass Direct, because Bass Direct have been their like primary retailer in the UK forever. You know, Bass Direct were selling Dingwall bass guitars way before anyone, before they even became the popular kind of like, you know, guitar that they are nowadays. Sheldon Dingwall was actually there, which was, it was nice to see him there as well, and you could try out a couple of the Dingwalls, so that was good, cool, and it kind of made sense because Dingwall, yeah, they're still a fairly small company. They're based in Canada, you know, so okay, fine. The guy who, it shows though, the guy who actually owns the company didn't just send some marketing person, he turned up himself. He's probably sorting out some business while he's out. It makes sense, but still, it was good to see that, and it made sense for them to be there. And then GAC were there as well, guitar and keyboards, most people should know about. They're huge kind of retailer as well, based out of Brighton, and they were joined up with a few others as well, and it kind of made sense. It meant that you got to see more stuff, and also I think it also meant from kind of a point of view of, if you wanted to go and buy something, you were able to buy a lot more of the stuff that was on show there, because a lot of the shops were helping to run the stalls, so they had them in stock, and that, you know, you could buy a lot of the stuff you were seeing there. Whereas sometimes you go to these things, you can try something out, but you're gonna then have to go to a shop afterwards to go and buy it.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. No, there was definitely like a lot of that. I think actually where the guitar and bass show like really stands apart from sort of what you can get on the internet, or what you can get even from going into a guitar shop, is a lot of the smaller luthiers, and
yeah,
a lot of these sort of high-end sort of boutique luthiers, there's no other way of trying as many of them in such a short time.
Yeah, yeah.
With sort of guitar pedals, because it's a lot quicker to build a guitar pedal, even very small guitar pedal manufacturers can have their pedals in major retailers all over the world. Whereas a lot of these luthiers are only going to make, you know, a relatively small handful of guitars a year, and if a lot of these are custom ones, they're never going to end up in any shops.
No, no.
And I think, like, today, I think the ones that most, that I most, I got the most out of were a lot of these small instrument makers.
Yeah, I think you're right. We've come across, last year we came across a few, and I started following them on Instagram and on social media to see what they get up to, which is good. And to be honest, they've got a very small following as well. It's not like these guys are getting hundreds or thousands of likes. Some of them are literally like posting up stuff and they're getting like 20, 30, 40 likes, you know. And they've got, they're just literally like a one-man band who's just trying to make their way in the world as being a guitar luthier, and, you know, just trying to grow their business. And this is part of it. And you're right, you do get to see some independent guys who are coming up with some really, really interesting stuff. And they're the kind of people who, like, if I had the budget and I met one of these guys that, you know, I come across one of them and I like what I see, I would definitely put an order down, you know, if my budget was endless and, you know, I just needed another bass guitar after another one.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I would definitely like talk to them. And I mean, one of the ones that we did go and check out and I spent a little bit of time was Oliver Lang Instruments. They're based out of Germany. I've never even heard of them before. I've never even come across them. But we walked past, and they had a small booth, and they had some really nice bass guitars there. So we thought, why not give them a try? And the guy, I don't think the guy was Oliver himself, was it? It was someone else who worked at the company, from what I could make out.
I think so. I'm not 100% sure either way, but yeah.
But he was really,
he knew what he was talking.
Yeah, he was really helpful, really friendly. Talked about the guitar, and they're really, really well made, and they've got that natural wood finish, and there was some interesting, I played this really nice white five string, and had a couple of Nordstrand pickups in it. I think they were the big man ones, which I was actually going to put in my secondary base. That's a whole other topic we'll come to one day. But yes, and I really like Nordstrand pickups. And when I was playing this thing, it, you know, it just sounded absolutely amazing. And then you, I know you played, and I even had a quick go on it, was there was a fretless one as well.
Yeah, oh, that was a beautiful. It was just the wood had, yeah, again, you could see the grain of the wood, which is something that we're both suckers for when it comes to guitars. And it had a gorgeous stain on it, and it was a fretless bass. And it's a fretless bass is one of those things I think we both enjoy the sound of.
Yeah.
We're both very used to our fretted instruments. So I wouldn't say that either of us were amazing playing it, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And just, it's one of those guitars, well, bass guitars, that was just really playable and just invited you to play it and cost a couple of £1,000 that I...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we asked the prices on a couple of their bases, and yeah, they all start at like upwards of 2,000.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure he was probably talking euros, but yeah, £2,000, let's say, essentially. And that's because when it comes to you put an order with them, you know, you can go through and talk which wood you want, what finish you want, what kind of, you know, what pickups you want, what kind of bridge you want. Everything, you know, is customer, you can customize every single thing. So obviously this costs, and they're all handmade.
Yeah,
yeah, they're a very small like kind of outfit. So yeah, you know, this year, like, coming across these guys, Oliver Lang, for me, if you want to go and check them out, go to oliverlanginstruments.com. that's oliverlang-instruments.com. I don't know if they're on social media. I haven't checked. They hopefully they are on Instagram. They definitely should be, because their basses look absolutely lovely and they sound amazing and they're great fun to play. So yeah, that's just one example of one of those, and for me anyway, that we came across, that was...
Yeah, I mean, the one that really stood out for me was Drewman Guitars.
Yeah,
they were good. Drewman.
Drewman.
And
Drew's
we,
the man.
Yeah, we met the guy who made them, and these...
Was that actually him?
Yeah, yeah, well, he was talking about making them, so I don't know whether he is Drewman, bitten Drew by man. A radioactive Drew.
is he Drewman?
Or whether he is like part of the company, but he was talking about them and making them, and they were aluminium guitars. And yeah. I've come across metal guitars a couple of times before, and generally it does seem to work. Usually the ones I've seen have got wooden necks as the sort of compromise of having the sort of metal body and the wooden neck.
Yeah.
And most of his did, but there was one which had a solid aluminium neck.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I had to have a go, and I wasn't quite sure what to expect from playing it, having sort of played on wooden fretboards for so long, but it just worked.
Well, pretty much nearly 100% of the time up until then.
Yeah, I think I've tried a carbon fibre one at some point.
Probably.
But no, it did have a slightly different feel, but it wasn't I didn't feel like it was any worse to play on, just, you know, like a rosewood feels slightly different from maple. This is just another different thing that works, and the sustain from this solid block of aluminium as the neck was great as well.
Yeah.
And the sort of finishes, the way he'd given them that sort of slightly metallic.
Yeah. So you played one that basically was a Telecaster body,
sort of Telecaster shape. Yeah.
Yeah.
With
these cool looking, they weren't F holes, but they were like holes that made it look a little bit more sleeker and more kind of futuristic, really.
It, yeah, no, it was a very futuristic F holes, yeah.
futuristic
and
F-holes.
As well had a, so it had a, I think a humbucker and a single coil.
Yeah.
And it also had like a little mute button,
yeah,
which was great fun. It was just sort of like nicely positioned for just sort of like playing with your pinky finger, and it's just the sort of thing that I can just imagine at the end of a sort of loud jam at that section where the bassist is just throwing off big notes, and the drummer is throwing in just sort of endless crashes, just sort of stuttering those big distorted chords. Oh, great fun.
No, they were really cool, and I even briefly tried it, and one of the things I said it at the time as well, which was quite cool about it, was the action on it was ridiculously low.
Mm.
It was a really low action on that guitar. It was yeah, you could probably play quite fast on it. Yeah, it was just definitely.
Yeah, and he said about that as well, that because of the fact that it is a solid aluminium block, it's got no truss rod. You can't adjust it. It is what it is. So it's the sort of thing that he has to get right first time.
He did.
That is, as I say, the thing with these smaller luthiers is that you do get things that do take a lot of dedication, do take a lot of effort, and can have these quite unusual ideas. And yeah, you do have to pay for it, but I can completely see that, and one day we'll be able to justify to myself.
It's one of those things that you see all these things and you're like, okay, well, I would definitely like a guitar from you, but in the pecking order of all the other brands or all the other like guitar manufacturers that I want a guitar from, where do you sit in that list? You know, so like, probably for me, my next one, number one, would be a Strandberg, you know, but then there's all these others like, you know, like Oliver Lang and all these others that I've seen and try and play, and you're like, oh, I definitely want one of those. Where would they where would they sit? You know, it's just but it's a great way of like seeing all these independent guys, and it's great to see so many of them. I don't know whether it's just me being on Instagram, and with Instagram being such a visual medium, the guitar world is very healthy on there. You know, my feed is just filled up with like guitar and bass stuff all the time, because people want to take photos of their guitars, of their setups, and videos of them playing and even making guitars. So there's so many independent luthiers on there, like loads of just others who I've just come across through Instagram as well. So it's great to see all of these like attending events like this, and so many of them, and it clearly there must be a demand out there. You know, obviously a lot of these guys are taking a risk doing this, because it's a saturated market at the same time, and there's established brands who are established brands, and even other smaller brands build to a really high standard, so you need to know what you're doing.
Yeah, but I think that's the thing, because it essentially, if you'll touch a small business, you can only make a fairly small number of guitars a year.
Yeah.
And so you don't actually need a huge customer base. Mm. And as long as they can find those guitarists who have the sort of same desires in what makes a guitar, then you end up with very happy customers, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's just really, really good to see. So yeah, we obviously saw Droom and Oliver Lang, and then there was, I mean, we went around and saw the whole thing, but obviously
there were standouts. There were loads, yeah.
There's obviously some that are standouts. I'm trying to think off the top of my head.
I mean, yeah, there was Grey Guitars. I actually just sort of picked that one up to test out the Audio Kitchen Big Trees, which is a company that I've been lusting after for years, and sort of, you know, rarely got the chance to play, because with small manufacturers it can be hard to find them. And so I was given this Grey guitar just to try out the pedal, but actually the guitar itself was lovely. And another Tele style, this time with a pair of P90s.
Yeah.
And just sort of really fun guitar to play. It worked, paired really well with the pedal I was trying it with. And yeah, no, that was lovely as well. So that was a bit of an accidental one.
Yeah, and then obviously we had all the big boys like Fender. Fender were there.
Fender, actually, yeah.
Gibson were not there.
Gibson were not.
You know what? No. And we didn't even bring that up once during the while we were there at the show. We didn't even stop and look. Where's Gibson? For some reason, we didn't even. Were they there last year?
I don't think they were. No.
Oh, okay. Maybe they just, you know, they're like, okay, they headed to NAMM obviously earlier on this year after a year's absence, but.
You know, maybe their loss.
Maybe they feel the UK guitar show is not worth their time and effort. They can, you know, to be honest, they market themselves despite their CEO coming out and saying very stupid things most of the time. but yeah, it was good to see Fender there. Fender had a strong presence like they always do, which is nice to see that they're committing to an event like this. And Jackson as well.
Gretsch
had, there were a good amount of Gretsch guitars there as well.
The Gretsch stand was very nice, actually. PRS, as always, had a beautiful stand.
Yeah. Their stand was much like last year's, just basically put all the nicest PRSs out and people will just lust over them and look at them.
They also included some of the like SE range as well, which are still beautiful, because like I don't know if PRS has ever made a non-beautiful guitar. They have some like pretty high aesthetic standards.
Yeah.
But they were doing a pretty good showcase of their range from sort of £400 to £4,000, you know, depending on what you're after.
Yeah, Ibanez had a strong, they had a fairly big stand as well.
The Ibanez stand was fun, yeah.
Yeah, it was well laid out. And there was one thing I liked about the Ibanez stand was the guitars were there, but there was plenty of room to grab a guitar and sit down and play. There's plenty of play space.
Yeah, I mean, not really anywhere to plug in.
Oh, no, actually, you're right. Yeah, if you just wanted to, you know, just pick it up and, like, just have a quick noodle on it to see how it feels.
I mean, the Ibanez stand did contain what I considered to be the ugliest guitar of the show. Which was the three-quarter scale Super Strat with painted-on F-holes. Including one of the painted-on F-holes that sort of overlapped with the pickup selector, so you've got this fake F-hole with a pickup selector sticking out of it.
Maybe they're just doing that because it's a three-quarter length guitar. Do you think it's one of their guitars that's aimed at kids, so give them a
Don't inflict such an ugly guitar on a child.
I'm trying to play devil's advocate here, because generally I think if you want a guitar with F holes in it, buy a bloody guitar with F holes in it. Don't get one with painted on ones.
Who wants a Super Strat and a guitar with F holes? They're not.
Someone out there, come on.
Okay, someone out there, no, come fair on.
I want that classical look. Yeah, I still want to shred like a demon.
Yeah, no, fair enough. There's always someone.
You know it. Someone who's like, yeah, I'm into that classical.
But if that someone is a child, then you should teach them some things about good-looking guitars. Okay, well, while we're talking about like guitars that made me go, ooh, I finally tried out a Vox Starstream.
I didn't even know they existed, or maybe they just passed my radar.
Yeah, it was one of those things where Vox made a big hype about it, but nobody else has really jumped on the hype, and it's a very futuristic looking guitar. It's a sort of
looks cool.
No, it does. It looks cool. I mean, it doesn't feel cool. It's got these sort of like wings that stick out of it, but they're a sort of plasticky material, and it's not a very comfortable one.
Mm.
And then it's got pickups, and just like the passive sound of the pickups was all right. It wasn't a bad guitar. But then it's also got a load of electronics to make it sound like a humbucker or a single coil or an acoustic or a 12 string.
It's a modelling guitar.
It's a modelling guitar. And I wouldn't say that I was any more impressed by the models on that than I was by the models on the Line 6 Variax, which I actually still own, but bought like 15 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe not quite that long, but like more than a decade ago. So with all the sort of stuff that's supposed to have got better in sort of digital technology, that I'm going a 12 string model, really turning it on, giving it a little play and thinking no, not really, is
I mean, like I said, I didn't even know, and then I came across them and it was like they look really cool. There was a white and blue one which looked absolutely amazing, which was their most expensive model, which is, I think, the £1,200 one. It looked amazing, but then you played it and you were like, it doesn't sound great. And I was just basically, and I made this comment, and I don't know, maybe we can touch on it now or a bit later in the podcast, but sometimes a company just needs to stay in its lane. You don't need to I know there's this thing of you want to kind of like up your profits and you want to expand, or you think you might be able to do something a bit differently and change the game. But sometimes just do the research. Vox make really good amps. They've been making really good amps for
my love of Vox amps is under no question. You can go back and listen to the episode where I bought my AC4 handwired, and I bloody love that thing.
Yeah,
but no, those guitars.
There's no reason. You're a successful amp manufacturer, one of the oldest. You know, you're up there with Marshall and Orange and the likes of, you know, and you've got like a roster of like artists as long as anyone's arm, you know, all like from all over the world who've made hits upon hits. And okay, fine, you decide, okay, we're going to make this like basically this kind of digital modeling guitar, which I've always been dubious about those guitars. I'd much rather let software, amps or pedals do that work and not the inbuilt guitar if possible.
Yeah,
you know?
No, look, As I say, I do own a Line 6 Variax, but I have not opened its case since I got my X-Tone.
Yeah, yeah. And this is the thing. So you tried it out and you were like, that sounds shocking. It's just basically like, okay, you've kind of decided to build this model. You're selling your most expensive one at £1,200, which is a fair amount. But for £1,200, I can go and get a decent Fender. I can go get a decent, you know, maybe a semi decent Gibson.
Yeah, no, but, but yeah, you know, if you're wanting a sort of range of sounds, then you can get, like, if you go for the sort of lower end of the budget,
you can get Line 6 Helix, easily.
Well, no, but I'm thinking you can get yourself a guitar with humbuckers, a guitar with single coils, and probably even like a guitar with P90s. And, you know, at that price, they're not going to be amazing guitars, but if you're spending £1,200, like, you can get better tones by buying two or three cheap guitars than you could by buying one of those.
Or you buy a semi-decent guitar, and you can even buy, like, decent modelling stuff, like I said, like the Line 6 Helix.
Sure,
like
those are modelling the amplifier side rather than the, which is a slightly different.
Yeah, okay, I take your argument. But yeah, you're right, you could easily buy two different very decent guitars.
Yeah, if you're a set dresser for a science fiction film and you want your band to have some futuristic guitars, I can recommend the Starstream.
Yes.
If you're a guitarist, no.
Yeah, that was a big fail by Vox. Yeah. And there's probably a reason why I've never heard anyone jumping up and down about it and not seen, like, you know, YouTubers I watch, like, oh yeah, check out the Starstream, it's bloody amazing. Yeah, Vox, stick to amps, you're good at that. Guitars, nah, leave it to the other people. You know, stay in your lane. Certain companies should just learn, stick to what you're good at, and you've got the customer base, you don't need to worry about it.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, if Fox want to make guitars, then they should make a decent reissue of, like, the Teardrop and the Phantom, which at least are cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, what else did we see? Oh, the other thing I thought was a sort of, like, mini-trend, and mini being the operative word, sort of short-scale bass instruments.
Yeah, there seems to be a way large number of them, way more than last year, but even last year there were a few, which was way more than probably in the last 5 years. And it just seems to be more of a, there must be clearly more of a demand for them, because why would there be, like, the company Ubase have got bigger and more prominent. I've seen them being sold in more places.
So yeah, we came across Ubase a few years ago at a bass guitar shop.
Yeah.
And we just saw a bass uke on the wall and just like, what?
Yeah.
It feels like a contradiction in terms.
I think
it was
like the Bass Centre in Camden. I'm pretty sure it was.
I thought it was the one on Denmark Street.
Yeah, that's the one in Denmark Street.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And we were sceptical, and the guy sort of plugged it in, and it was a little fretless one, and this sort of pretty small instrument was doing really surprisingly good sort of deep bass, and with the fretlessness it had an almost, you know, like, more like a double bass than anything that looked like that should sound.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I remember that. That was crazy. And yeah, they were there. Ubase were there.
So Ubase were there. Then it's not mayonnaise. Mayons? What was it called?
I called them mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise.
Yeah.
Sorry, I kept calling them mayonnaise all day and then couldn't remember their correct.
Sponsored by Hellman's.
Yeah. So they had one that was, it was, yeah, just sort of like half the length of a bass guitar.
Yeah.
And it, with bass strings.
Yes.
But it felt like there was sort of the same tension, so it ended up being a sort of like treble bass guitar.
Yeah, so it didn't sound, so I had a quick play on it, and so did you. It didn't sound as bassy as a U-bass. Definitely didn't. It seemed like, it was like, I don't know, either you buy it as a novelty thing, or if you want to play like a bass, a slightly novelty-ish instrument that's still a really high quality build because it's a Mayonnaise, but it's not a full bass, so you get the like higher registers of the bass guitar.
No, I feel like if we were recording an album with unlimited budget and we had a song where we wanted like a higher register solo from the bassist, that might be the instrument for that. But no, it seems very strange. And then, like, taking even more of a step into the land of strangeness was the Stinger by, what were they called?
Oh yeah, that was one of the first.
It was the first one we had to pick up, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was this company. So they make bass. They make predominantly bass guitars. They're all like just
Stonefield.
Yeah, Stonefield. So they make all natural wood based. So obviously we saw them and we're like, that's like moths to a flame for us. They're like, oh yeah, pretty natural finish bass guitars. Let's go and check them out. And they did look cool. And then we came across, what was it? This string.
The Stinger.
The Stinger, which I'll let you describe it because.
So yeah, this in the way that Mayonnaise one was a sort of. It felt like it wasn't sure what it wanted to be. The Stinger was taking a very similar concept, but was really sure what it wanted to be in a way that, like, made it a clearer love or hate kind of thing. It was, so it had a sort of like, the body was sort of bass size.
Yeah, it was.
And the neck was bass width, but it was a much shorter scale. No,
it was a six string bass.
It was the width of like a six string bass, yeah.
Yeah.
So it had the strings were all spaced like a bass guitar.
Yep.
But the neck was much stubbier, yeah. And rather than looking like a sort of shrunk bass, it just looked like this strange stubby mutant thing. And it was tuned to a guitar register.
Yeah.
And was just really strange to play. And like, I'm not sure who it's for, but I hope they find that person because somebody's gonna have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, I played it and I was like, okay, so the top half I'm playing like a bass guitar, and then the bottom half of it I'm like, oh, then I need to like think like more like a full on guitarist here. Mm. And you know, I'm not. There are plenty of bassists who can do that. I'm not one of them. I'm not pretending to be. So for me, it just felt. I was really ambivalent about it. It was just, it looked cool, it looked interesting, and I played it, and it was like, yeah, it's nice, it was like, okay. But I was a bit just like,
No, it was one of those things where I felt was entirely not for me, but it...
Same.
It felt like something that was, like, looking for the right musician.
Yeah, yeah. It looked kind of cool.
It was really eye-catching. Kind of fun to play and sounded fairly good, but it was a really weird sort of middle ground between everything, and if I hope that it finds its player because it was a really
that was a strange one. So it was interesting to see. Then this coming back to it. Yeah, you get to see these weird concepts that you walk into a guitar shop, they're not going to be selling a Stonefield Stinger.
No,
bass thing that costs...
It's like six people in the world who actually want that.
And it costs like about over £1,200 to £1,300 to be fair, the bridge it had, the tune, you know...
Oh,
the,
yeah.
It was like... It wasn't
super high quality instrument. That's the thing, it wasn't a gimmick instrument.
No, it was the build on it was insanely good, which made it kind of... intriguing to try.
Whereas the Mayonnaise one kind of felt a little bit gimmicky from a company that sort of like had so many other beautiful guitars, and it just sort of like felt let's try a small one.
Yeah. Oh,
the Stinger sort of like felt like a really deliberately odd thing.
Yeah, and Mayonnaise are like, there's plenty of all kinds of guitarists out there who play them, and you know they've got quite a shreddy following, and then their bass guitars as well.
Their basses were gorgeous.
Yeah, their full length basses were amazing to play and try out. And again, they're one of those companies where most of their bass guitars start at least £1,500 going upwards.
Mm.
You know, maybe even more than that. You know, and again, they're custom built. They've actually grown quite a lot recently. They're one of these brands who have been growing more and more as especially like certain kind of, you know, musicians are kind of gravitating towards them, and I think they've got quite a large following, especially within like the technical kind of tech kind of metal side of things. You get a lot of tech metal guitarists and like kind of genty guys playing some of them as well. But yeah, they're nice. They do nice products. Just the short scale bass. Mm. So yeah. So what next? What else caught your eye or didn't? Overall,
none of the acoustics really. No, actually, none of the acoustics I was allowed to play caught my eye.
Yes.
I played a couple, and it may be that just like the acoustic environment was entirely wrong to be trying like acoustic guitars. Like I tried a Rain song, which is another sort of carbon fiber one.
Yeah.
But there was one, and I can't remember who the guy who made it was. I don't know. But it was a fanned fret acoustic.
Yeah, which we've not seen.
Which is very eye-catching, and unfortunately it had been a custom job, which the customer had let him take to the guitar show on the condition that he didn't let anybody play it.
Fair enough,
yeah.
Totally get that. Did he at one point say to you, because obviously he was explaining the fan fret thing to people, he's like, yeah, it feels a bit weird to play and stuff, and I was like, well, I didn't say, but I thought at one point you were gonna basically say to him, well, kind of played plenty of fan fret basses now.
I've played a few now. Yeah, I mean, I do find it a strange one, and it looked a bit strange. The things that seem easier on a fanned fret are not necessarily the sort of things that I would normally play on an acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
So all my like chord shapes and the way I'd approach finger picking, I'm so used to having fixed, they're like straight frets.
Yeah.
The
other thing about fan frets is the whole multi-scale thing. So it means that generally with these multi-scale like basses and guitars, it means you can drop into a lower tuning and not lose that kind of like tension within, you know, your setup. And that's one of the main advantages of like doing the fan fret. And I mean, I don't know, unless this guy is going to be playing like, you know, I don't know, drop A acoustic or what. It's kind of a strange one on an acoustic guitar.
Drop into like dadgad, which obviously is not like all the way down to like that far.
True.
But I wouldn't, and I've heard of guitarists dropping to like
drop C.
On acoustic.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I've heard many acoustic guitarists, and this is like a baritone acoustic, take it much lower than C, but I'm sure somebody would want to. Yeah.
So maybe as clearly whoever commissioned it has seen a purpose for it, or they just really love the whole fan fret technology and were like, well, if you're going to make me one with some fan frets.
I mean, if it's somebody who has got used to playing electric guitars which have got a fan fret, then it totally makes sense they would want an acoustic one in their collection as well.
Oh yeah, all day. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. So yeah, other than that, which I did make him promise to bring a playable one to next year's show. So we'll see if we follow this up in the podcast next year.
There will be other episodes between now and then, by the way. We're not just saying we're only doing one a year guitar show.
But there'll definitely be one next year.
Yeah.
And hopefully many in between, yeah.
Yeah.
But other than that, acoustics didn't really grab me or catch my eye. This is the second year
in a row where we've been, and yeah, there's always a big acoustic presence, but it's always just a bit...
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, you know. Maybe it's just... I have no idea.
I do think part of it might be that it's not a great place to listen to acoustics.
Yeah, I don't think so. It doesn't seem like it generally. But yeah, so that was the thing. One big improvement, I think, on this year's show compared to last year's show, as apart from some of the stuff we touched on at the beginning of the podcast, I'm so glad there wasn't a whole kind of museum section like there was last year. Because
that was such a waste of space.
Yeah, that last year it was the second floor, or the first floor, whichever it was. So they had, you know, if you went, you'll know, just to the London Guitar Show, they basically had, you know, they had the main space where all the booths were, everything, and then they had another thing upstairs, and it was basically just this retro thing and dedicated to, who was it last year? I can't even remember the guitarist who it was dedicated to, but it was someone and all his guitars, and then Fender basically had literally a museum there. With some of their oldest guitars. Yeah, great, lovely, you know, it was nice to see them.
The problem with it was not so much that it was there, that it was so sparse. So this year
it took up so much space, but there wasn't much in it.
Exactly, and like, so I already mentioned they had like the Black Star and Orange one. The Orange one was actually there last year as well.
Yeah.
But because it was just sort of like there in the thick of things, it was just a nice little extra thing amongst the sort of atmosphere.
Yeah.
Whereas last year, no.
I don't know, and I know, probably get a bit of shit from this, but you know, I know that kind of stuff is aimed at like the old boys and stuff, and they get to look at these like strats from the 50s and 60s, and like, you know, when it was like the golden age, and you know, those strats and Gibsons and things that are vintage and worth so much, you know, worth sometimes more than a bloody house. But it's just, for me, it's like, okay, cool, you see them, nice, but I'm there to go and try out gear and walk around and see what's what. If I want to go and see like a museum,
I want to see what's new.
Yeah, I don't want to go and see like basically a museum piece. If I wanted to do that, I don't know, build a guitar museum in London, and I will go. You know, I will straight away go. Or build one somewhere else in the UK. I'm sure there is, but you know, and I will definitely go. But just having it in the middle of like, you know, a kind of a show convention thing just doesn't make any sense to me.
No.
I'm so glad they ditched that this year, because it was just last year it took up so much space, and I was kind of like, yeah, this was a waste. And yeah, you saw like, you know, the old school guys just like having an absolute field day, but for me, the whole time I was there, I was like, yeah, can we go back to you know, trying out the stuff that's more relevant to what we do nowadays, kind of thing, you know.
Mm.
But again, that's one of the things you get with the guitar show. You get all sorts of kind of guitarists from a range of ages coming, you know, from like little kids down to like people who've been playing since, you know, before you and I were even.
Yeah, little kids were annoyingly good.
Yeah, of course, you always go. Yeah, we were at Miners stand up. There I am, about to plug in this bass and start playing this little, what, he must be no more than 10. Shredding away.
Max, yeah.
At which point I just looked at you, I was like, what's even the point, you know, what's the point? And then proceeded to just tootle along on the bass as I do. So yeah, but it's good to see that range of people. Actually, and one of the things the guy at Druman was saying was, so you know that aluminium guitar you tried, he's like, some people when they saw it actually just recoiled at it, didn't even touch it, didn't even pick it up, but when he showed it to them, they just recalled him like, no, I don't want to touch that. I don't want to play that. That's just so out there. No, it's not what a guitar should be. And it's just like, yeah, you do get that in the guitar world. There is some people who are stuck rigidly to the what a guitar needs to be, what it should be. You know, yeah, a Fender Strat from like the bloody like 60s or 70s. Yeah, great, you know. There's more to life than that, and it's it is one of those things. So it's kind of like, I don't know, this is something I wouldn't mind having a kind of a discussion about maybe one day. It's like, when will we get to that point where like the old boy brigade kind of, this sounds a bit morbid, they're no longer there, so that constant thing of just looking back at that golden era is going to start fading away and it starts moving forward.
I think that, like, the problem is that the old boys mentality isn't necessarily just coming from ones who are there at the time. I think a lot of the people who expect guitars to be these traditional shapes from the 50s aren't the people who were there in the 50s. I don't think these are all people who sort of picked up the first batch of Telecasters or Les Pauls, you know?
Yeah, it's one of those that's become entrenched over the years.
And yeah, and it keeps getting sort of passed down, and as long as we, you know, keep venerating the same guitar heroes and the same guitar tones
and the same guitar shapes,
we miss out on the new guitar heroes playing the new guitars with the new tones.
And you do see it on social media as well. There can sometimes be a polarizing kind of effect, especially when you're watching certain like YouTube videos and people demonstrating, you know, on the bigger YouTube channels, where someone might be usually a shop, like when they're demonstrating maybe a guitar that's aimed a bit more shreddy, a kind of thing, a bit more modern style, and some of the old boys will come in and just be like, oh man, this sounds awful, you know, it sounds like this and that, and vice versa, it goes both ways. So yeah, you do kind of see that divide. So yeah, but it's good that also, again, at a place, you always get the old boys all turn up, and you can always see them as well, the old kind of like guys who are probably still in their minds living it up in the 70s and 80s kind of thing, which is fair enough. But again, at a place like this, we do get to see a lot of cool new stuff.
Oh yeah,
which is really, really good. So yeah, overall I think it was a good guitar show. I think it was better than it was a step up on last year's by merging the two. Made it, I think, a lot for you and me, it made it a lot more fun, because obviously we're guitarists and bassists, and it means we can both try loads. There was loads of stuff for both of us to try out.
Yeah, no, we both had sort of, you know, equal amounts of time standing around waiting while the other one was having fun before we got to go and play. Yeah. I felt like last year I was being really unfair in that you were having to watch me play six strings because there weren't enough basses, but now there were enough basses.
Although I did get to try it last year, I did get to try out a few basses.
No, there were a few, but this year I thought it was a much more...
This year it felt like a 50-50 split almost. Yeah. There were a lot of bass companies there, you know. Marley, you were there. I didn't try out any of theirs. I did try out the Dingwall ABZ-5-3, which I got you to try out as well, mm-hmm. which just felt amazing to play and was like an absolute dream. So that was awesome as well. So yeah, I think there was a good split. It didn't seem too much in one way or the other. There was plenty to see, plenty to try, plenty to buy if you wanted to, you know, which we didn't do.
Well, yeah, so I suppose just to finish off, I suppose we should reveal what we did buy.
Go on then.
You know, with all these exciting things that we've been seeing that are, you know, they're really sort of stirring our passions, I bought two guitar cables.
yeah, well, I did marginally better than you, if it counts in, like, the amount of stuff I bought. I bought one guitar cable, a fret wrap for my second bass, and also some plectrums.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the amount of buying I did.
So we had fun, but our bank accounts have escaped fairly intact.
Yeah, yeah. Which is saying something, and which is good. But yeah, so
and more importantly, we're back audio rambling.
Yes. We are. It has been a long time. There's been all sorts of stuff going on in the background, you know, and because of that, it's just we've just not had the time. And from a personal point of view, and I know, Mark, you're going to be going through this next year, when you've got to plan a wedding, and as you get closer to that date, there's always loads of stuff still to do, even though you can be so organized, which we were. Well, my wife was, not me so much. Got to hand it to her. But still, and so we just haven't had the time to come together and, you know, put together an hour for the podcast. I think also the other thing is we want to try and do this more live and in person as we can, so that we can get you the best sound quality. Because when we have often done it, as you guys will know on most of our early episodes, we've kind of usually done it over the internet using... oh God, I can't even remember the software. But
it's a bit dodgy.
It's a bit laggy due to, you know, internet connections and stuff, so it usually means to edit it is spent a lot of time doing just time shifting stuff, which is an absolute ball ache. So I know we both want to try and do more live ones, so we might not put out as many, but we'll try and put out kind of, you know, maybe on a monthly basis or something, and try and do them more in person as well. But that being said, we're not promising there'll be another one out this time next month. There might be
but
one.
We'll
even
definitely like have a few done before next year's guitar show.
Yes,
definitely.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. We're not just going to leave it to about how many did we do after that last one? Maybe about three podcasts or four,
something like that.
Yeah.
Let's try and beat that this year.
Yes. Yes. Definitely.
And until next time.
Yeah, we'll see you guys later on the next. Audio Rambling Podcast. Remember to follow us across social media. It's all down there.
And keep rambling.
Yep.